Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views, as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
I think the chaos testing has shown so much value over the years. In fact, we've thrown the chaos monkeys in and we're using them quite aggressively to just pull things out and maintain, maintain uptime. But yeah, putting it into security stuff. Yeah, actually, and in some ways we would do that as unannounced tabletops and things like that. But that requires a level of confidence in your own infrastructure and a level of confidence by the leaders to let you do that, knowing that what you do may actually have an impact, or knowing what people don't do as a result of it may also have a customer impact.
I think if you take the Unicorn Project and the Phoenix Project and merge it together and made a movie out of it, because you know how there's like some movies you watch where
the Manticore Project.
Exactly. It shows it from one person's perspective, right? And then all of a sudden it goes backwards and shows it from the other person's perspective. And there's some cool movies that have done that, right? Where you're like, all of a sudden you're like, wait, are we back to the beginning again? Yeah, but it's through right. It's through the protagonist eyes, right?
That is true. Well, it's kind of back to the one that the podcast that we entitled "My CISO Hates Me," right?
Oh,
it's all perspective. Which side are you looking from? I mean, it's very easily to miss intent and create our own stories around a one-sided picture.
But Dan, you mentioned uptime though in your conversation about the chaos testing, and I think when you look at least in the last year, the engagement, not just, and I'm not saying security teams weren't engaging in the business side, but the business is engaging more and more and more with security teams. It's becoming a much bigger topic of conversation.
Right.
And with that, the security team, not just the security leaders, get to understand what the business does. So even going down the chain, when you ask, well, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Now they start to get a better understanding of what the business is actually trying to accomplish. When you take something like the Unicorn Project and the Phoenix Project, and you look at DevOps and you talk about uptime, and you really start to understand manufacturing, but done in the containerization and the applications and the workloads that are being done, and going back and comparing that to the assembly lines and the micro segmentation that you have with suppliers and producing, and why uptime is so important and why work in progress is so important. And the idea of using containerization is so that you could have work in progress and fine tune and change things without affecting the finished application. So the security team becomes definitely aware of that as they begin to work more and more with those DevOps teams. But then if you took that same with your production team, well, my company always tells me we make cars or we make widgets. Nothing stops that. It's kind of the same thing. Like they don't want anything to slow that down or stop that. So it's becoming, from a vendor side, more acutely aware of what those businesses are trying to do. And I go back to the what makes a superpower, right? You got your army, you got your economy, but you got your manufacturing. Your manufacturing builds that army, drives that economy. And part of that new manufacturing is that DevOps side. So anything that slows that down or hinders the process, right? The uptime, right, of DevOps or the uptime of manufacturing is a hindrance, but I'm looking at the word I want to use. This came from Coover when we were doing a conversation on at ConnectNet. He goes, security is the enablers, right? Because I was talking about how in this book that we were talking about how security could be looked at as one of the dragons, one of the things that fights the ships from moving forward and burns them to the ground, blah, blah, blah. And I go, a lot of times we're not looked at as enablers. And immediately in the chat line, Kuv was like, security is, in bold letters, enablers. And, and the more you start to understand the customer and the outcomes, but more from what the business, security is enabling.
Look at that. As Dan shows us a presentation that he had put together.
It's almost as though you were at a talk I gave this week, Brian.
Well, it's funny.
I snuck in the back.
It's funny too, because I was actually thinking about this morning, putting together a presentation to kind of walk through the journey to our president on kind of the landscape, to where we were, to what we're doing now, to where we're going, right? Showing that full picture of the journey. And it kind of hit me that you've got very different security departments out there and how they're viewed. That you have security departments that are still, it's a cost center checkbox. We have to do this because compliance, governance, all of those things say that we have to do this, right? So the value add is very little. But like you said, the right security department within the right IT group or wherever it is in the organization becomes a catalyst. And it becomes a catalyst as a kind of a change agent for pushing the organization to the next level. You know, that's, you know, for me, that's one of the things that I love about manufacturing. Granted, I've only been in the space now for a short stint, but if you look at the potential for IT to have an impact, to increase visibility, increase throughput, to just increase the speed to market of what's going on, the propensity for IT to be a catalyst if done right is huge. It's such a giant value add.
But it's predicated on the idea, and I want to dive down this thing that you said earlier, Brian, that security understands the business that it is part of. And I think that is, along with a whole host of all other fundamental things that make for an effective security program, are these fundamentals that I think are starting to gel, like security being part of the business, not a hinderer of the business.
Right.
But also a whole host of other security basics that we've seen, we've seen defects in, or people have lost sight of in going after some of the harder programs, the harder topics, but have sort of left the fundamentals behind, and have been the cause of many of the recent issues that have hit the news, many of the recent incidents. And I'd argue that, as along with security being very conscious, everyone in security from top down, and CISOs are starting to get there more and more, although not completely, and everybody in security, but this goes for IT too, we are part of the business. The technologists, right, the security are part of the business, and you need to understand the business that you're doing. So, you know, Eric, I'm glad to hear that you see it is becoming clear to you how technology can enable the business. But I think at the same time, there's a whole host of other security things that we need to be focusing on in order to properly secure the business that is not cool whiz bang things. These are right. Things like, you know, basic account maintenance when people leave the organization. Not sexy by any stretch of the imagination. Although I think identity and access management as a whole is a very, is a rather sexy topic.
I was going to go there as well. Having seen some of the stuff that you've built in the past, Dan, with some of the diagrams on identity and access management, how everything works together, the concept of it, in portraying that concept, is non-sexy, right? It's something you have to do. But as you think about it as a foundational, fundamental item that is going to underpin so much more, once you get that structure and architecture correct, your propensity now, your ability to be agile and run faster is so much greater, because you don't have to deal with legacy systems, legacy ways of connecting identity. You've already got it to single source. There's so much that can be drawn upon from that to get you to a future state. But this is, and I'm sorry, Brian, you're going to jump in.
No, I was going to say I would want to go to the other side of this. So it is really important for the security team to understand the business. I do fundamentally think that the business really also needs to understand security. And one thing I want to touch on is, You look at quality control, production control. If you get a Supplier of the Year award, all right, and I'm going to revert back to automotive, right?
What? Really?
No, nobody thought I would go there. But if you win GM Supplier of the Year award, I mean, you're holding that trophy up. It's put in the front lobby of your headquarters and you talk about it, and your plants strive to hit quality awards. And I can still remember in my years past, some of our plants would have 6-7 years in a row. And if they missed 1 year and then all of a sudden picked up in the following year, when the management would fly around and visit the plants, they'd be like, what happened in 2016? Like, this is what happened. Right. And they're like, you jumped through and showed all the root cause analysis you did and everything else to improve your quality posture. Right. There's no awards handed out in the security side for, hey, I want to give this team, this supplier or this, vendor of ours, the security award of the year, right? Or my team, a security award. But essentially, when we talked about certain things of security being that enabler of quality control, production control, and everything else for the business, and also to protect from a warranty side as well. I don't know the right way to go about it, but the business would start to recognize it a lot more and make it fundamentally more important if there was something established even by your customer base.
And that's where I think from a security department perspective that we at some point have to be good marketers as well throughout the organization. I think the organization not understanding what security brings to the table, I'm going to take the hit on that. I think that belongs to us, that we haven't done a good job marketing what we can bring to the table. Give you an example. There was an EDR platform in a prior life that I put in that our selling point was, if you look at the bread and butter of an automotive retail organization, it's the fixed ops area. It's bringing in the car for service, right? So what do you want to do? You want to maximize throughput. To do that, you have to be faster in being able to pull codes off of a car, diagnose it, fix it, right? So one of the tools that we put in allowed us, or was a much less impact when connecting to an ODB2 port and being able to stream the codes off of the car, being able to run the diagnostics. So a security tool allowed us to actually run faster, which allowed us to put more cars through the service, which directly tied to revenue, right? So I think, and coming back to that, you guys are saying the same thing, but that comes back to understanding the business. And yep. If you don't understand the business, then you go back to the first example I gave, your cost center. And that only goes so far. I've heard Dan Gregory is a great one talking about this and really pushing that narrative that if you don't understand the business, you've completely missed the mark. It's the whole idea. And I think Dan or Dave Glenn, I think it was Dave Glenn actually threw out there at one point that people are like water, right? And the controls that we throw out there are rocks. And if we just lob them in, people move right around those controls. You have to understand the impact and what you're doing and be in a position to sell that at the same time.
Yeah, without question. And we are as much, security is as much a part of the organization, of the business, as any other operational business part or strategic business part. And we need to operate in that way. And this is part of the maturity of the field. Or maturing of the field, and we're getting better and better, but still lots left to do. That helps establish security principles and actions throughout the organization without having to fight at each one. And it will also ensure that we can help people understand why some of these things are there, which means they might be less inclined to go out of their way to avoid them or go around them.
Right. To that point, do we do ourselves a disservice by uttering the phrase, we're going to go talk to the business, or we need to understand the business?
Yes.
I heard somebody, I saw a post, and I apologize, I forget who it was that put something on LinkedIn at one point, but to that effect, that we are part of the business and we need to start speaking as such. And yet I'm just as guilty, right? I did it right before that. You have to understand the business. Well, we are part of that. And you've got to see it. It's all intrinsic.
Right. This is not an upstairs downstairs kind of a relationship.
Right. But the foundations, I kind of liked where you're going with it, Dan. And I kept thinking to do a different analogy in a sports analogy. So I grew up playing soccer. Right. And, as we look at, we'll take on the EDR space since Brian represents one of the best in the biz in that space. that without fundamentals, I almost see it like a soccer team taking your best players and putting them on defense. Where's the ball going to sit? The ball's going to sit in your end because you don't have a midfield. You don't have the forwards to keep pushing it down the field towards the other side. And it's the right. same thing with some of your foundational elements that you're sitting back. EDR, let's be honest, it is one of the very last pieces of the defense posture. And if that's where you're putting all your time, you're going to create, and I think I've said this before, it's just create chaos and noise without some of those foundational elements to cut out the commodity crap that comes through there. Not to say that you shouldn't focus on EDR, but it's part of a bigger picture of the foundation.
Dan, I'm guessing you're probably going to share this slide afterwards, but
yeah,
for those that are listening, we have a slide up that says the basics, and underneath that there's a list of items. And Eric, I like going back and talking about the sports analogy, because I look at the last Detroit Pistons team to win a championship here in Detroit. And when we went up against, in our first series, the LA Lakers, you had Shaquille O'Neal, you had Kobe Bryant, and everybody said, we're going to get swept in three. And I said, I don't know. I go, these guys play together really well. They got great teamwork. And each one of the guys had a different skill set, right? Maybe you could call those soft skill set as well, because they also had the composure to work together even when losing. And in doing so, we ended up beating the LA Lakers and went on to win a national championship. And I talk about that team a lot because there wasn't a necessary, like a superstar on that team. What one of those players leaves and goes to another location, that next location didn't necessarily end up going on to win a championship. And I look at so many different teams that will spend a ridiculous amount of money to bring in who they think is an all-star, but the rest of the cast isn't ready, A, to support him or to be supported in the way that that person plays. So like, it's like you said, if you're going to put all your money into one tool, but not worry about the other fundamentals, you're still not necessarily going to win. It might be the sexiest, nicest thing that you have, and it does really well at times, but there are several other things and basics, you know, fundamentals that you need to also apply to that in order for A, the team to work, and also to be competitive.
Brian rounded out the analogy so much better than I did. That was great.
But yeah, I mean, that's why you run the grapevine drills. It's why you run these, yeah, why you do the basics. So now let's take this out of analogy and into practical. So what are the basics? What are the kinds of things that people need to go back and think about? And by the way, if you're listening and you're not in security, you're not part of the security team, this means you too. You know, all of these things, and I'll link I'll put this particular slide, a link to it in the show notes. So please go take a look for it. But all of these things are things that people can do, even if you're part of even if you're not part of the security organization, if you're part of a business unit or a specific operating area, or you're a small business. These are the kind of things that you can do to improve your basic security. And I think, first of all, and it's at the bottom of the list, but it's really at the top of my heart, which is education. People are our greatest asset, but in security, people are also our biggest potential liability. People, humans want to help. People, humans want to, are able to be manipulated. And so, by bad actors. And so, spending time with the continuous education process, continuous awareness process, people understand the new potential threats and treat people like they're not stupid. Oftentimes in technology, oftentimes in security, we make the assumption that people are, or we go at things assuming that non-technologists are a different class of people when it comes to technology. And I think technology is enough in people's lives now that we can assume that most people have a good understanding of how to use tech, and many of the things that resonate with technologists resonate with people every day. And so education in this space is paramount. Here are the things that are happening. Here's what phishing looks like. Here is what attack looks like. Here's why a good password is really important, or how to use password managers. I recently gave password managers to people I know and love, and started to help them understand how to use it. And it's a very different discussion than it would have been 5 years ago when these weren't quite as visible. But why do I need to do this? Why? What's the point of all this? This is just adding friction. I think people are ready.
And I don't think, and just correct me if I'm wrong, the very last item, educate users, patrons to risk on ongoing basis. This list isn't necessarily put in order of here's the order that you do things. These are just, when you look at the basics, because I think the educate part is really important as well. And it's not just saying educating your security team. It's educating the company. It's educating all the different users and practitioners.
Everybody.
That, yeah. And Eric, from the panel that you were on last week, you spoke a little bit about some of the training that American Axle was doing specifically around some of the phishing. And then earlier on this week, I saw a gentleman post on social media and he said, quit phishing your employees. It doesn't help. And then there was probably 100 comments back and forth of people arguing, but he didn't talk about, you know, quit phishing your employees this way. Cause I really liked the way you talked about how you guys were doing it and creating a reward system, not for being bad, for one, just attempting to be part of it. Right. And that, you know, you got to look at the metrics. And I think the conversation had also gone from that, you know, just 5 years ago, it was probably about 80% malware, 20% phishing. And today it's about 80% phishing, 20% malware. So educating everybody within the organization to understand what some of those implications are and really how fast things can move. There was a really interesting article this morning from AmeriGas, right? One of the largest propane distributors in all of North America. And they released information on a data breach, and the data breach lasted for exactly 8 seconds. And in that 8 seconds from the phishing attack, they were able to compromise 123 users and get access to Social Security, et cetera. But it was limited to 123 employees out of the entire business, but it only lasted 8 seconds. And I thought it was very interesting that they still had to close the breach, but they were able to show that it only lasted 8 seconds. And in that time, they, with the tools they had in their team, not only did they investigate, remediate, but they were able to figure out exactly how they have been impacted. And it just goes to show the speed at which threat actors can move. And if you use those examples to kind of show like how fast something like that can happen, right? It's like when you talk about, you know, cooking on a gas stove, and really like if you're cooking with, like when people say, well, I don't like gas, the same thing can happen with an electric stove. If you're cooking with oil and the oil gets really hot and splatters out and you get a fire, and then all of a sudden your reaction is to throw water on it, and next thing you know, you've caused this giant fire. And how fast that fire can move in 8 seconds is incredible. And it's very similar, like just clicking on that one phishing link, how fast that can happen, but having the right tools in place, but also the right understanding, right? And knowing that if the user who did it feels comfortable enough immediately contacting security to be like, hey, I think this was a bad link. Just wanted to let you guys know. And they know where to send it. They don't even know where to send it. They're going to call their boss who says, I don't know, I didn't pay attention in that class. Right. And then he's calling someone. An hour later, they figure out where to send it because they don't think it's that big of a deal. Just think about in 8 seconds what happened and what could take place in an hour.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And, you know, this comes back to why, you know, why people run practice exercises. It's why people run, you know, for incidents. The more aware, the more it becomes rote in people's minds, the less people have to think about the answers, the faster they can respond, and the faster you can all, you know, get through an incident.
Yeah, I think the key to a lot of that communication is, and it comes back to the fundamentals who we were all taught on, know your audience, on who within the organizational structure are you speaking to, because I think it's a different message that's going to resonate differently with each person.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation with somebody recently on one of the projects, and communication is a pyramid, right? If your executive team sitting at the top, IT at the very bottom, not to show any type of hierarchy, but it's the breadth of information that's needed at each of those communication levels, right? If you look at it on an IT perspective, we want all of the details, the technologies, all of the components that go into the given project we care about. But as you go up the layer, you strip off the technical, the details, and now it's a high level picture. Well, it's the same thing when you think about security awareness training, that the 8 seconds, the impact to the organization resonates really well with your executives, because that translates into downtime, that translates into lost revenue, insurance claims, all of those different things. But as you talk about that middle section of the organization, you know, from at least from my perspective, I find that the conversation is better suited around what matters for them. Not to say they don't care about the organization, because some do, some don't. But I find more and more to translate it. So take that 8 seconds. What does that mean to you at home? How quickly could somebody get into your bank? How quickly could they get access to your credit cards, to your social media, to those things? And then just by tweaking the message, it gives it a different meaning to them. And then they start bringing those skills back to the organization.
Yeah. And on that communications topic, which I think you hit the nail on the head on that, being able to operate and communicate at different levels, knowing your audience, is something that's not, doesn't come naturally necessarily to technologists. This is what often inhibits people's growth in organizations, and focusing on communications will help you be able to better speak with, and I'll use the term one last time, with the business, with the rest of the company that is not technology. Because they don't speak, they are not going to speak the same technology world that we do.
Right.
And I'll tell you that I did some leadership coaching some years ago through a business based in Chicago and here in Detroit called Speak by Design. And wow, was I impressed. You know, we really made some huge changes to how we communicate, and it made all the difference. So I'll put the link there. This is not sponsored, but I just had a really good experience, so I'll share it. And our mutual friend, John Bingham, actually, is the COO there.
I was going to say, I've actually heard amazing things about John and about Speak by Design, and also for the number of years that he was a security practitioner and as a CISO, his ability to, A, talk up the chain of command, but also down the chain of command, and also with the community in general. It's part of that, I won't say ambiance, but part of that conversation we've had before about, the security leader's ability to, you know, work, not, and I'm trying to avoid using the term with the business, but within the company and being able to articulate up, not just the value of security, but what security is also bringing to the table, so that the business understands why security is so important, and not just security understanding what the business makes, like what drives revenue, right? Which,
right.
Yep.
Well, it's John, I mean, since you already mentioned his name, John was a phenomenal CISO. I know we're talking to him as if he's not coming back into the CISO circle at some point, and certainly hope he does, because he is phenomenal at what he does. But I remember listening to one of his talks, and his comment was that he was the chief storyteller. And that really hit the nail on the head. Had nothing to do with technology or anything like that, that his role was selling security, removing roadblocks, and it was a true leadership role. And I think he did that very well, because I think a lot of times, I mean, if you look at the CISO circle, a lot of us come from technology. And I know we've all mentioned it at a time, the propensity from technologists that I'm going to use the hammer analogy, right? That if your favorite tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And that's a big problem in the technology space. And I've heard it on a lot of different discussions, that somebody's got something near and dear to them that, you know, you must encrypt everything or all of these. The answer is it depends in many cases. You have to, and sorry, Dan, for stealing that from you.
That's okay.
Today.
I give it to the community.
And it's to get to that leadership role in security, you have to take a step back away from technology, be a leader first, and then technology becomes an enabler of people and processes. It's the third leg of the stool. People and processes must be first.
Absolutely.
Eric, I just want you to know you should go back and see if you can read the comments during your panel discussion of the InfraGuard, because you threw out the hammer and nail analogy, and I go, there he goes, the hammer analogy, and I did the emoji of the hammer, and yeah. I got like two or three responses back. They're like, Eric loves his analogy, go hammer. And I was like, it's great though. And like, it was funny because you could tell people recognized the quote, but also in the timing you were using it and how applicable it really is.
Yeah. Well, it's, I'll go back to when I moved over to American Axle. I appreciate Dan sent me some information from Forrester. And that was one of the things that Forrester talked about in the first X number, at least I think it was Forrester, X number of days. They were very clear on stay away from technology, right? Understand the people, understand the processes, look at the overall organization. How does that come together? Technology is just something we use once we've got all of those pieces in line. But it's hard. It's hard to get your minds around that. And it's the same thing. And I'll bring it back to the basics, right? As technologists, our propensity that as soon as we start seeing blinky lights, cool technologies, and let's be honest, in our space, there are some really cool technologies. There are some companies that are doing some great things. Now, there are also a lot of companies that make it look like they're doing a lot of great things, and it's snake oil behind the scenes. But nonetheless, there's a lot of great movement in technologies out there, but it still sits on top of some of those foundational items that you have to have within the organization before you can take advantage of some of those more mature offerings.
And yeah, and some of them, these, again, back to the things that aren't quite so sexy, but they're things that you got to do. You're building on your people and process pieces. All of these things are people and process things. They may be within a technology, but they are about process. Things like having good password management. Things like having multi-factor authentication in place, because usernames and passwords get stolen all the time. Have one more barrier. Things like knowing the systems that you have around. What systems are, what's running and what's no longer running. And the reason I bring all those particular ones up are, the Colonial Pipeline attack. Now that we know a little more about what was going on in it, it was a stolen credential from a different attack that was being bought and sold in underground circles for very little money. Was used against Colonial. Is a person who has left the organization. So that's the other piece, is when people leave the organization, turn off their accounts on the day that they leave. So somebody who has left through a VPN that was disused. So it's infrastructure that was no longer in use. It was a person who is no longer at the organization. And it was a password that had been reused and stolen from somewhere else and reused, still used inside a corporate world, and was the pathway in.
Right.
None of this could have been solved by new modern whiz bang technology. This is process.
That's so interesting. Because the InfraGuard talk that Brian mentioned. So it was with the Detroit 3 and then two tier ones. But as I thought about it, one of the things, I didn't get a chance to go into it, but as I was thinking about that, from an OEM that wasn't represented on that panel, if we look at Toyota, since we love drawing things back to automotive and a lot of things that come from the Toyota production system, but the five whys, right? And you just did exactly that, Dan, that as you start going into, all right, ransomware was the end result. Let's pull the five whys. Let's get down to why this happened.
And right? Five whys being a root cause analysis tool.
Right. And as you go through those five whys, just like you did, each of those levels hits a basic. I mean, if you draw it back, I'll draw it back to the CIS 18 now, that as you go through on access management, as you go through inventory of software and assets, all of those things are usually absent in these broader breaches. Not pointing the fingers at these companies or anything, but I think we get caught up again far too often on applying technology before building out processes. And the processes are still holding true and being able to combat a lot of these different attacks. Now, certainly, and this, I'll, you know, draw attention back to one of our earlier podcasts where we talked about know your adversary, you know, the art of war and all of that. Certainly, depending on your space, as you get into some of the military applications, depending anything that a nation state may take interest of, the game changes a little bit. But at the same time, I think a lot of those companies are mature enough where they're crisp on the basics. So they've moved into the more advanced tech that they can bolt on to a lot of that.
And one thing you mentioned earlier too, when you said like, you know, this might not be like the sexy thing to talk about, you know, identity access management, et cetera, but it's doing some of the basics. But the same thing you just said about the 5Y fishbone analysis, the idea of, you know, the identity access management could almost be looked at as a PFEMA, right? Or a DFEMA process from a process failure standpoint, go through what the risk of each one of these are, you know, different points and put a different level of focus on this to minimize the risk, right? It's all about minimizing that risk up. And it goes, sometimes it's not using this nice, sexy tool. It's going back and actually going through the process of each thing one by one by one to figure it all out. And then once you figured it out, then you're building your system up, but you've put different processes in place that hopefully should minimize those risks.
Right. And you know what I've seen more and more, you know, that's, you know, I'll pick on SentinelOne, not pick on, but you know, kudos, as I look at some of these technologies, I think they're also though helping us draw greater visibility into some of those missing basics and yeah. Some of the hygiene, which is great. But I, you know, I think about it as we look at control frameworks and all of that, and it's, you know, anybody who's listening, I keep coming back to what was the CIS 20, now is the CIS 18, and I've got it up on my screen here.
And the link's in the show notes.
And what I love about this, and I'm building this out in a slide to show why this has to be linear, right? And it makes so much sense. And I think a lot of organizations still miss this. As you go through control one, control two is understanding inventory. What do I have in the environment? What do I have from an asset? What do I have from a software environment? You know what the third one is? Data protection. And if you think about it, can you answer without having the first two done? Can you answer the question, I know where all my data sits. I know where it's moving. No, because you don't know what to watch. You don't know where everything is. You cannot fundamentally answer the question that your controls are uniformly applied across everything because you don't know what equals everything.
Now, I want to bring this back, what you're saying, to any listener that isn't in security. If you've ever decided to install a fan, a bedroom fan, in one of your bedrooms on your own, and you picked out this one, and I won't say the name of the fan, but it I thought it was this great fan, but one thing in all the comment sections it said was the directions are really bad, that it takes a really long time to install it. So I bought this really, really nice fan, and if you're one of the listeners and you try to assemble this fan and put it up yourself because you're going to do it yourself, and maybe you're not the expert in fan assembly, right? That you don't have 30 years of security experience and you try to put this fan up and after 5 hours, you literally just want to rip a hole in the ceiling, but you finally get it up only to have it wobble. And that the light comes on when the fan cord pulls and the fan cord comes on when the light pulls it. And you bought this really nice fan, but you really couldn't get it put in and you didn't understand. And this is kind of getting away from what we're talking about, but from somebody that A, doesn't understand security, right? That if the directions are there, if you're Eric, if you put out the information to the team, right, and some of the whys and everything else, and somebody that wasn't on the security team could read through, they could clearly understand why we're doing this,
right?
What the risk is, why this is important, right? But without understanding and having that good, like you said, the good baseline and something that simplifies it to explain to the rest of the company, as well as the security team. The security team understands the controls and everything put in place. It makes it that much easier. So just buying the nice fancy fan that had the highest rating, read how easy it was to put together and assemble and then get to integrate into the bedroom and actually use and how many times it wobbled.
Right. And that's a good point because these tenants are not unique to us. You know, think about in warehousing, right? Inventory management. You have to know where your inventory is. You have to understand your current counts to understand anything that's walking out so that you can fulfill orders, right? That's asset management. You know where it is. You know the quantities. Now you can fulfill orders. The same thing translated to healthcare. Look at how the regulated being able to check in, check out medicine, scanning it, understanding when it got to a patient, because God forbid that if you gave a patient more morphine because it wasn't checked in, it wasn't tracked, right? That's asset management. You're checking it. So you could take this to any vertical and those tenets still exist. It's the basics. So again, this isn't unique to us, but we seem to still have a problem getting our hands around those basics. I'm off the soapbox.
No, it was a good one. And Dan, I'd love to have you jump in even more, because I don't even know that we hit all the basics, but just knowing how important those are, right? And you could pivot back to sports as well. You know, before picking up a bat and just taking your first swing, or before picking up a golf club, a few little basics about understanding, you know, how you're bringing your hips around, you know, if you're looking to get more head speed, right? If you're, why you bring your wrist over on the bat, you know, like there's little things that if you practice those over and over and over again, you're going to start to hit the ball out of the park. You're going to start to hit the golf ball a little straighter. Now, this doesn't apply to everyone, because I don't know that I've ever started to hit the golf ball straighter. My swing looks better, and I have great pants that I wear when I come out and play, but
I'll vouch,
not exactly
for that,
a straight shot.
And I'm in the same boat, and that's why we've gotten better at being able to get the beer and bring the beer to the rest of the team for those who actually know how to golf. So I'm perfecting that game.
But at the same time, the thing I want to warn against is letting perfect become the enemy of good. And true, all of these things, yes, they take time to, you know, takes time to achieve perfection at any of them, be it sport, be it security, be it technology, be it anything you do. But some of it just comes with starting a little bit. Even if you just make a little bit more sensible password process, even if you make, oh, let's have the two-factor authentication debate on SMS. So there's this whole discussion going around that SMS, text messaging, as a second factor of authentication is declining in use because people can do SIM swap attacks. You'll see stories about how people have lost their entire online digital wallets from places like Coinbase and others because someone took over their SIM number, took over their phone number, received the text message, and got into the wallet. Okay. And security pundits will say SMS is a failing method of multi-factor authentication. But you know what? I would still rather people put in an SMS second factor than no second factor of authentication at all. Right. Are there better methods? Yes. Are they harder to put in at times? Yeah. But if you can get to something, don't turn on the second factor of something because it's SMS. You know, take little steps. And over time, you can figure out ways to mature into the other things. But just take small steps. Even if it's just you don't need a whiz bang inventory system. Keep a spreadsheet with a list of your inventory, of your systems, of the software you run. And version numbers. These processes are fundamental and don't require the best technology to do or the best process. Just start writing them down. Just start keeping track and then look at them. So please don't let being perfect or not having all the right technology to do this or the most robust stop you from getting started in any of these. So I think that that's what a lot of people seize up in fear and go, I can't do all this. The other is don't look at this list and say, that's a lot, and seize up. Like when I look at Netflix and go, there's 700,000 things to look at and I don't know which one to pick. So I go back and watch yet another episode of Law and Order. just pick one, start with it and continue.
I use some of these same principles when I go over to somebody else's house to cook, right? like know what software runs on those systems, right? I open up their drawer. There's like three different bags of cheese, regardless of the expiration date that I've just looked at. I give it the sniff test, right? And then I immediately tilt the bag down and dump it so I can see what the bottom layer looks like, because there's normally mold there. And expiration dates are just kind of a target, right? Like that thing could last 6 months further past the expiration date. But then if that thing was left out on a counter for 2 days straight, it could definitely pull ahead before that expiration date. But give it the sniff test, right? Like, and then take a look. It's verifying before applying. Before you just toss some sour cream into a bowl, look at it. Is it growing something around the edge, right? Like, give it the... If anyone can hear that was the sniff test real quick before actually applying.
Were you sniffing wine or cheese there?
That was the sour cream. The sour cream sniff test.
I think Dan hit it on the head with the SMS comment, though. I think there's got to be an understanding as well that within each of these different tenets, there's depth, there's levels of different maturity that, sure, you could get to a point, depending on your space, where SMS is no longer viable. But for the vast majority of the world, SMS is better than, like Dan said, it's better than nothing. You know, look at access to things, you know, limit access, right? That could be simply take away local admin. That's how it takes away a lot of the attack vector without having to go ham on locking down everything in the environment. There's little incremental changes you can make in each of these areas. You don't have to see them as binary that I have to do everything or nothing. Take incremental steps.
And don't listen to, and don't go and listen to, you know, the most robust security professionals talk about how their organization is if you're just getting started. I mean, go listen and understand the strategic direction, but don't think that you need to get to that right away. Small steps. Right. And all of these things, by the way, also apply in your personal technology too. Every single one of these, you go to your Google just recently started turning on multi-factor authentication by default. When you sign up for a new Google account, it now basically just assumes you want it, and you have to figure out how to not implement it. But if you don't have it yet on your Google account and you have the chance to enable it, go enable it. If it offers you multi-factor authentication, go enable it. Things like password managers, like 1Password. I know when I'm using 1Password, it actually makes a mention for any password I've stored of a system that it knows has two-factor capability. It'll give me this little warning on the top. It says, this system has two-factor. Have you enabled it? It starts to tell you, you can start making small steps. The other thing is, you know, you use the same password everywhere. Yes, you shouldn't do that. Don't do that. Don't use the same password everywhere. But it also doesn't mean you have to dedicate, you know, 4 straight days of your life going through and changing every instance of that. Make small steps, small measurable steps forward on getting those adjusted. The other is closing out accounts you don't need anymore. This is, you know, in the enterprise, this is removing access that you don't need. Only give people access to the systems that they need. Same at home. Turn off accounts, disable accounts, delete accounts at places you no longer do business or no longer have a need. You know, it feels good to start collecting accounts, but every one of them is everyone that you don't need, it's okay to get rid of. Although it's oftentimes admittedly hard to figure out how to delete them. But with the advent of GDPR and California's Privacy Act, and now the burgeoning other US data protection acts, there are increasingly easier ways to say, hey, I have a request to delete myself from your systems.
And then there was this long moment of pause as we take in everything Dan just explained to us. Now, I think all of this conversation from where we started in the very beginning to kind of going through the basics, talking about a business or corporation in its entirety, and it goes for almost any different vertical you talk with. But security is becoming a big focal point, and with what the government has released in the past month in different directives that are being handed down. And there were letters sent out to several of the very largest organizations within North America that basically stated, it didn't say that we're asking you to do this, but it talked to those organizations. And I'm talking about some of the large manufacturers right here in the state of Michigan that you are critical to the US. And we need everyone to start looking and hardening their security. When a letter like that comes out from the very top, right, from the government to the business, it makes the business and the boards have to start to take a little more stock in what are they doing in security. And it brings security more to the table. And you're seeing that as an overall conversation. And I know, Eric, you mentioned earlier just about legacy. I think it's one of the hardest things that manufacturing has to deal with, is that they always have legacy within their environment, but it's also a product of the business that they're in, because you invest in very expensive machinery and tools and equipment. And that equipment has a long ROI on it. So it's really tough to just go replace a $5-10 million tool just to update the operating system. But I think that's where some of these other vendors, and I'm not going to say their names, but that create the stack that goes on the equipment, might have to start working with vendors on being able to update their operating systems. But that pulls in a whole nother conversation of risk and compliance.
Right. Let me throw this out there, because I know I've uttered the phrase in the past, the fundamentals fundamentally don't change. Right. So think about it. Now enter in, I'm going to buzzword here. Ready? Zero trust. Right. Let's think about that. And that's, I think far too often that is being sold as a tool. And from my perspective, beautiful.
I didn't have the button ready in time for the buzzword. Let's try that again. Eric, what's your buzzword?
Zero. Yeah. If it was later in the afternoon, we'd all have to do a shot for the buzzword.
That's
but
right.
It's still too early, at least for me. But as we think about the zero trust mindset, does that shift the way we look at the basics and how they apply to the enterprise?
Well, why don't you do a quick on what zero trust is?
Yeah. And this is one, Arun will correct me if he listens to this, being the purveyor of all things zero trust and the expert in the space. But from my perspective, zero trust is a mindset of nothing. So let me do this. Let me take a step back. Historically, within an enterprise environment, that once you are on the network, once you're on the internal network, there's implicit trust, right? So my analogy has always been, think about how security used to be run at arenas. You have a ticket, you go through the security stand, you get inside. Once you're inside, you're implicitly trusted. You belong there. And that's it. Nothing changes.
The hard zero outer trust, shell and the squishy middle.
Right. 100%. Yeah. So zero trust is changing that mindset, saying you're trusted now, but not now, right? So that it's a point in time, it's taking our controls and making them more agile and looking at risk as a dynamically changing component of security, that trust is only a point in time, that as you change behaviors, as you change where you're coming from, it's looking at all kind of different facets about you, devices, and all of that, that continually evolves. So it's moving from implicit trust to explicit mistrust, that I don't trust you until you prove that I should trust you and should give you access. That was a lot.
Yep, it was. I'll point to a reference that I think started all of this, and then I'll let you get back to your actual point. the Google long ago, probably 6, 7, 8 years ago now, came out with an idea called Beyond Corp. The idea that the internal network doesn't need to exist. If you assume all networking is dirty and assume all devices are attackers until they prove otherwise. Trust the device, trust the identity, and build your app to withstand internet capability. It basically was the beginning of the end of the internal network. It's a mindset. It's not a single piece of technology you can buy, but I put a link to it into the show notes, the idea of Beyond Corp. And it's a really, really interesting model.
It is. And as you know, to use another analogy, I think as we looked at security traditionally, security was all about the four walls, right? We looked at the perimeter of the network was around a physical building. And what zero trust does is it shifts it on, all right, we're going to put the walls around what matters most. And that's usually critical data systems that generate that data. And to Dan's point, identity becomes the broker to allow you or deny you access. It's about who you are and what entitlements you should have. So, I mean, I guess to answer my own question, does it change the basics? My perspective is it doesn't. It just shifts where you apply those basics, and applying it to more specifically, rather than taking on the whole enterprise and the physical buildings and physical perimeter, that these basics actually just get applied around, call it the crown jewels or what matters most.
One thing I was going to say on that zero trust method, that also goes back to the checking of the cheese and the sour cream. Zero trust. Whenever I walk into somebody else's kitchen, I don't trust for a second that they regularly go through their dairy drawer or their vegetable drawer or their herb drawer, because you'll open that thing up and like, whoa, you're growing things that I didn't realize you could grow in a refrigerator.
That is epic.
I love that. So I think that the idea of zero trust is another fundamental, because again, it's not zero trust is not a technology. Anyone who tries to sell you a technology that says this will give you zero trust is lying to you, or not telling you the whole tale. It's much about process and mindset and strategy. And so I think over time, it is a change in strategy. It's a change in basic, which is a move from hard outer shell and squishy middle to actually understanding. It's a form of inventory. It's a form of knowing not just what systems you operate, not just what software you run, but also how they talk to each other.
Right.
And that it's another inventory, and it's one that's hard to implement, because up to now, software has always assumed it had ubiquitous connectivity within a network, and that it saves troubleshooting. You just open everything to everything. But in a zero trust world, you have a much more constrained, this system can only talk to this system. It's like micro firewalls. Everything, this port, this protocol, this desk source, this destination, but from system to system, not from my network to the outside world.
Right. And now to use this to do kind of a shameless plug for where this group is going next. I think as we talked about on the Great Security Debate, there's a love for staying kind of high level, debating what we should be doing kind of across the enterprise, across the community and all those things. But I think there's also recognizing that there becomes a need. Zero trust becomes a great example of this, that there's so much more to it that starts to get more technical, the application of the mindset and all of that. So on that note, stay tuned, that we're working through getting ready for a new set of podcasts that'll run alongside of this on distilling security. And the idea there is that in a shorter segment, we will drive deeper into the actual technology and application. And the goal at some point is also to get those in person. So fingers crossed that, everything keeps trending in the right direction. We start coming back to in person and can bring the community back together to do a deep dive on some of the more technical concepts.
When Eric mentioned his ability to bring beers to the team that's golfing, that has a better swing, that's also involved in distilling security of hopefully being able to get together, bring drinks to those that we know can distill on a certain topic and get them to speak truth. So I think we'll be able to dive really deep, and it'll be neat. And when we talked about identity access management and zero trust, I think those are two, perfect topics for the idea of distilling and getting deep.
100%. So stay tuned with more to come on distilling security. You can find more information when it's available on our website, greatsecuritydebate.net. We'll post information there, and we'll post it. I promise you, you'll hear more about it in future episodes as we get closer to the launch of that podcast. But in the meantime, please, if you want to be the first to hear about it, subscribe to the podcast. You can do that from our website. Again, greatsecuritydebate.net/subscribe. There's a link to all of the various podcast apps. Or if you just want to skip that step, go into your podcast app, search for Great Security Debate and hit the subscribe button. If you feel up to it, please put a rating in there, put some comments in there. This really helps to move the podcast up in visibility. The more people rate, the more people provide feedback, the more the algorithms promote it. And we really want to get this in front of as many ears as possible. If you want to find us on Twitter, we are at Security Debate, and we love that feedback, as I mentioned. And it doesn't just have to come inside podcast apps or inside podcast stores. Email us feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net. And I jumped into the end without thanking Brian and Eric for yet another great security debate. Gentlemen, this one is, I think, was a little less debate, a little more discussion. But I think it was a necessary topic, and one that, you know, as I hope not to see, if somebody's going to get broken into, I'd rather it be not because they left the doors unlocked. I'd rather it be because somebody brought their actual skills to break in to the store or break into the network, not because we weren't doing the fundamentals. So thank you for this great discussion today. And to everyone else, subscribe, and we will see you on the next Great Security Debate.